Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Jenson Lewis, former Major League pitcher, VSiN by the books, will join us and we will go over Game 6 of the World Series. We will either have a new world champion, a very improbable world champion, or we'll have a Game 7 on Saturday night. So either way, it is very exciting. Can't wait for this game. Really looking forward to it. From a fan standpoint, from a betting standpoint, you can tell me any of the three scenarios happen over the next couple days. I wouldn't be surprised by any of it. That's Jays winning 6 or either team wins in 7. Your guess is as good as mine. I don't have a great feel for the series. On one hand, kind of feels like Toronto. They just have whatever you want to call it, magic, karma. They put the ball in play. They get contributions from all these different guys. They've gotten off the mat a million different times. And now they're home. They've dominated the last two games or won pretty comfortably. And on the other hand, would you be surprised if the Dodgers look like the Dodgers a week or two ago when they were beating up on the Brewers and they hit a bunch of homers and we're looking at a Game 7? I don't know. From a betting standpoint, I think the line is a little too high. And I do like, and this is my favorite bet, and I actually really like this bet, the Blue Jays getting half a run in the first 5 innings, lay $1.20. You find that at DraftKings. I just think two good pitchers. Yamamoto's been obviously outstanding, but Gausman's been really good too. And that half a run, getting that tie-breaking run is so critical. So can't wait for it. Really should be fun. And again, Toronto, you look back before the season, they had the lowest win total of all the AL East teams. They were basically expected, not basically, they were expected to be a last place team. If you just go by the win total, now 78.5, which was their number, that's not a typical last place team. It's only a few games under. It's a really good division. But Yankees were anywhere from 89 to 93, depending on when you bet it, with the Cole and Stanton injuries. Orioles were actually 87.5. Red Sox were in that 86.5 range. And then Tampa was 81.5. And then you had Toronto. Somebody's got to be last. And they were 78.5. And here they are, one win away from winning the whole thing. And not going to crown them yet and talk about all the resilience and all the things they had to get through, because there's still one more game to win. But this is just becoming a remarkable story. And we'll see how it plays out. If I had to guess, like my gut is Toronto wins Friday night. From a baseball fan standpoint, I am rooting for a Game 7, hoping for a Game 7. We haven't had one since 2019. That was a really good game. That was dramatic. I mean, it doesn't get much better than a World Series Game 7, the tension. A Game 7 in any sport, but World Series Game 7, that is awesome. And we just had an NBA Finals Game 7, which was great to have for the first time in a while. That didn't live up to the excitement because of the Halliburton injury, but anytime you get that kind of moment where you just sit down and you soak it all in, you're just glued in on every pitch, there's so much tension, there's so much drama. From a sports fan standpoint, hoping for it. But don't feel great about the Dodgers. They've not swung the bats well. And we'll talk to Jenson Lewis here in a minute and see what's wrong with them. Is it something they can fix? It's interesting with the Dodgers. They came into the season, this juggernaut, 105 win total, 104.5. And they won their first 5 games. And it looked like, oh, they're going to go way over and win 110 games. They're going to go undefeated. All this. They were really pretty mediocre for long stretches during the regular season. They survived the division against the Padres because the Padres couldn't get out of their own way, weren't up to the test. But the Dodgers were really inconsistent in the regular season. And then the playoffs came, and they won 9 out of their first 10. They breezed through the first 3 rounds. And the take, the reaction, I had the same one, is they were taking it easy. They were going half speed. They were pacing themselves. Maybe that's true. But now we've seen that other version of the Dodgers, and maybe part of it was the week off, but the lack of bullpen, the lineup, you know, comes and goes in certain spots. Inconsistency there. So you've seen both versions of the Dodgers. You saw the Dodgers be the dominant team we expect them to be the first part of the playoffs, and you're seeing some of the warts, some of the flaws here in this series. And really, I mean, just think about Monday night, if you were able to stay up, or if you did stay up and watch that dramatic victory. Blue Jays are crushed. 2-1. Series. Game 4 is at home. Game 5 is at home for the Dodgers. And now we're 3-2 Toronto. Toronto gets both of them and now has two shots to close it out at home. It's really just remarkable. So I'm excited for it. I will take Toronto plus a half a run here in the first 5. I think that's the way to go here. I'll get to my football picks and then we'll do Jenson. So Last thing, Yamamoto, it is, by the way, Yamamoto against Gausman, minus 145. Dodgers are a favorite, plus 118. Total is 7.5. Probably just a three-person race for MVP. Otani, Guerrero, and Yamamoto. Yamamoto is now 12-1. Otani did not do much of anything the other night. Yamamoto, when we did the show the other night, was 20-1. Now he's down to 12. Not that I've had great feels or great predictions on these awards, because I liked Snell and a couple other guys. Glass now. Guerrero, minus 205. Otani, plus 230. Yamamoto, 12-1. I don't see a great bet there. I guess, if anything, take a long shot with Yamamoto and figure he keeps the season alive. He goes 8 innings, 1 run. Otani still doesn't do much, and they win in 7. Maybe they give it to Yamamoto. That would be interesting if that's how it plays out, if we get a Yamamoto-Otani race, depending on how Yamamoto pitches and how Otani does in the next couple games. Quickly, football, I'll give two in each. And Ravens, Dolphins, I had the over on the Megapods. So frustrating. They moved the ball up and down the field. I haven't really complained about bad beats this year because there haven't been that many bad beats. It's just been crappy picks. This one felt like it deserved better. But the Ravens just did enough. I mean, they got an early lead and kind of just took the foot off the gas, moved the chains, and Dolphins couldn't do much offensively here. It's hard to watch that Miami team and think of Atlanta. How can you watch that Miami team and think, wait, we were down 34-3 at home to this team? It's really hard to believe. But I think Baltimore is going to win that division. I've changed course on that in the past couple weeks here. They're now minus 165. Schedule's easy. Lamar is back. Pittsburgh, I don't think, is any good. So I think the Ravens will be in the playoffs, and I think they'll probably win a game. It depends who they play. Denver, Chargers, maybe. I mean, it's really hard to forecast. Now, you get the idea of the four or five teams it could be, but the Ravens making a run here in what looked like a lost season is possible. Not too many 1-5 teams in the playoffs making runs in the playoffs, but the Ravens have a chance to do this, just that. NFL picks. I like Atlanta here. I'll take the 5.5, mostly 5.5 here. I just think they bounce back. I think they bounce back. I think if you look at the Patriots wins, and it's been talked about all week, a lot of different shows. The Patriots, it's a great story. They're going back to the playoffs. They've got a quarterback, and he does look like the real deal. They've beaten the Browns and the Titans and the Panthers and the Dolphins and the Saints. It's really not an impressive array of wins. Yes, they won at Buffalo, and that is their signature win, absolutely. But if you played this game a couple weeks ago, a month ago, the line is like 1 or 2, maybe pick them depending on when you played it. I don't think there's that much that separates these teams. I do think Atlanta still has talent. You do have to explain how they lost 30-0 to the Panthers in that performance last week against Miami. They're not well coached. We know that. Raheem Morris should not be an NFL head coach. The offensive coordinator, Robinson, is not much better. But I think back up against the wall, off an awful performance. I'll take the points here with the Falcons. And I like the Colts. I'll lay the 3 here. I just think their offense is so much more explosive. I would say than the Pittsburgh offense, because it's the Indianapolis offense against the Pittsburgh defense, which is really a bottom 5 unit. You think of Pittsburgh, you think of defense. That is not them this year. They have all sorts of holes. Green Bay moved it up and down the field. Everybody moves it on them. I think the Colts get into the 30s here. I don't think the Steelers can keep up, so I'll lay the 3 with the Colts. I think they continue to roll. It'll be interesting to keep an eye on this. The favorites, you don't have to handicap the games. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to have a job. You just bet the favorite. You collect your money, and I'll see you tomorrow. The favorites just continue to steamroll. So correction always comes at some point. I'm sure the books will just gradually jack up those lines a little bit to try to make you think twice and keep away teaser money and parlay money. But these favorites continue to roll as the Ravens cover here on a Thursday, and it has just been chalk fest here the last couple weeks or so. So Steelers, Falcons, I'll give you 2 in college. I like Tennessee at home against Oklahoma. I'm not a believer in Mateer, really, since his injury. I don't think he's been good. I don't think he's been healthy. He had a bad game against Texas. He didn't do much against South Carolina. And I just think you go into Tennessee, that's a tough place to win. They're going to score their 30-plus points, and I just don't know if Oklahoma has the offense to keep up, similar to the handicap with the Steelers and the Colts, where Tennessee's probably going to get their 30-plus on anyone, especially at home. Can Oklahoma match that? I'll go Tennessee. I'll lay the 3. I mentioned I like Vandy. I do like Vandy. I feel like it's a little too trendy, but you could say they're too trendy every week. All they do is cover these numbers, dog, favorite, everything. They just continue to cover, so I do like them plus the 2.5. And I expect that to be a close, low-scoring game, 23-20, something like that. I'll give you a weird one. Colorado plus 4.5 looked like the worst football team in America last week. That was the worst, just the most incredible box score you will ever see. But they have played much better at home. They beat Iowa State. They should have beaten BYU, who's a good team. They played Georgia Tech down to the wire. Their performances on the road have been really bad. But this game is at home. It's off a bad loss here. Not a bad loss, just a complete embarrassment for the program. They look like a JV team. So getting the 4.5, I think Colorado bounces back. So Colorado, Tennessee, and we'll call it Vandy in college football. The Steelers and the Falcons in the NFL and the Blue Jays getting a half a run in the first five. We'll see what Jensen Lewis thinks. That is next. This is Should Have Bet More Podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More Podcast. Friday night, we will either crown a champion or we will be headed towards Game 7 of the World Series for the first time in 2019. To discuss it, there is nobody better than this man. He used to pitch for the Cleveland Indians. He now hosts, co-hosts with Dave Ross, VSiN by the Books. It is Jensen Lewis. Jensen, what's going on, man?
Buddy, it's been a great World Series, right? A lot of fun, a lot of intrigue, and I think this is the first time that a season in Major League Baseball will begin and end outside of the United States. Pretty remarkable history involved here. And the Dodgers, ironically, will be part of the beginning and the end. However, it does end up. Remember, they were with the Cubs in Japan, and now we'll finish with the Blue Jays in Canada. So, hey, Mr. International Shohei Ohtani, going to get the start of the year, and we'll see how he finishes as well against Vladdy and the boys.
And not only two different countries to bookend the year, November and March. It started in March, it ended in November. So you think about it, December, January, and February are the only months where we didn't have regular season games, which is kind of wild, kind of nice because it's such a long season. It keeps you company. But before we get into the actual game, let me just ask this. What is your confidence level that you have a feel for how this series ends? Because I have none. You could tell me any of the three things happen. Jays in six, Jays in seven, Dodgers in seven. I have no idea. I feel like I've lost a feel for the series. What do you think?
I think we have a window into at least game six from a standpoint of Dave Roberts has no confidence in his bullpen whatsoever. I think extending Blake Snell the way that he did over 110 pitches in game five really gives us an idea of he don't want to have to go to anyone outside of running his starters as far as they can go. So that kind of lends me to Yoshi Yamamoto and how do you follow up the game two masterclass that he had. History would tell us that to do it three times in a row, I'm not saying he's going to go throw a third complete game in a row here in the postseason, but Will, this would lend me more towards, I don't want anything to do with his outs prop. It would lend me to, I want everything to do with the under on the strikeouts prop, because we have that teamed with, you know, the Blue Jays, and we've talked about it, you and I have before, one of the lowest whiff percentages as far as a lineup goes. And I think to kind of top it off is they really changed their mentality from game one against Blake Snell and then game five, where it was action early. They didn't want him to get into a groove whatsoever. It won't shock me, Will, if they extend that same mode of attack against Yoshi Yamamoto on Friday night.
Who do you think wins the game?
I would really love to see the Blue Jays do it. Now, full disclosure,
Dave Ross lets you get away with that. I asked who wins. I didn't say who you think wins. Dave's too nice. I'm not like who you got?
I picked the Dodgers in my MLB Network Radio on SiriusXM predictions at the beginning of the year. Now, another piece of irony. The baseball is the hardest thing to predict, you know, as far as division winners, playoffs, where it's just the marathon of the season. I picked the Dodgers over the Red Sox. Now, this would have been a rematch of the 2018 World Series. And for all intents and purposes, I actually feel decent that I got the Dodgers back and into a position where they could do it. I think the Dodgers win just because I think Yamamoto is on another planet right now. And I'm really intrigued to see him handle the moment. He kind of has your get out of jail free card. It's him, and the Dodgers were expected to win this series, and he's really been the one guy that from a pitching standpoint has been their beacon. So if you're going to go down with the ship, you go down with the best guy, and I would fully expect Doc Roberts to roll him out there and let him go as long and as far as humanly possible.
You know, it's interesting. The Dodgers, the first 10 games of the playoffs, 9-1 the first three rounds. Quick work of the Reds, 3-1 Phillies. Those games were pretty close. Absolutely buried Milwaukee. Milwaukee looks worse and worse by the day. And at 9-1 going into the World Series, the Dodgers looked like the team we thought they'd be in March. 105.5 wins, dream team, unbeatable. They were coasting in the regular season. That means nothing. Now, all of a sudden, these last four or five games, you're starting to see the team that was inconsistent in the regular season, that only won 93 games and went, you know, 12, 13 games under. So, look, I don't know what's real. At some points, it just feels stupid to doubt all of their talent. But at other points, I remember thinking the Padres were going to win the division. It does feel like there is something off with this team. Where do you ultimately come down? Do you think they win both of these?
I think that the pitching ends up siding more with Toronto with two chances to win. And I don't know how much confidence you have in Glass now going into Game 7. Max Scherzer's probably only going to be asked to go one time around the lineup, and then it's really bonus outs from there. I wouldn't expect a ton of length out of him. It was one of the handicaps coming into this postseason, Will, and I even thought that the Phillies and the Dodgers had the biggest question marks to answer in the back ends of their bullpen. It's kind of now rearing its ugly head where no Tanner Scott, no Alex Bessia. I can't overstate enough the loss of Alex Bessia because of from the beginning of the year, Will, to the end of the season, he's probably their best reliever. And to not have that, obviously with just a horrible family situation he's dealing with, is awful in its own right. But from an objective baseball standpoint, when you're the manager and you're looking at, okay, if I need 3, 4, 5 big outs at the end of the game, you want to have your best bullet, and they don't. I think the other part of this, too, is that when you look at how runs have been scored, 24 of the 47 runs, I think, so just a tick over half of the runs in this World Series have come via the long ball. What do we look at from the Dodgers' standpoint? 9 of their 18 runs, so exactly half of their runs this postseason, or at least this World Series, have come via the homer. This is the only series in which both teams have scored 50% of their runs via homers. You got to go back to last year's World Series, 2017, and 1957. Just some mind-boggling statistics here. And then finally, one more to throw at you. When the Blue Jays out-homer their opponent, they're a perfect 8-0 this postseason, and that's why they are on the precipice of winning it all.
If you had to point the finger at why these big Dodger bats are struggling, is it bad at bats? Is it, you know, some of these guys, Mookie and some of these other guys, maybe declining? Small sample size, it doesn't mean anything. And if you're Roberts, how do you jumpstart them? Or you just kind of throw them out there, write their names in the lineup, and hope they start to hit?
So two things I think can be true. Number one, I am really amazed at how Toronto has navigated not only Ohtani, but have really honed in on making quality pitches to Mookie Betts. You don't see these kind of stretches and elongated stretches of struggle from Mookie Betts like you have. And I think they're pouncing at the right time. I know that Dave Roberts talked about changing the lineup a bit, and I wholeheartedly endorsed him getting Andy Páez out of there and putting Alex Call in. I wondered aloud here, Will, of would you flip to try and get Mookie going? And really, they had done this early in the regular season. Mookie would lead off. Ohtani would hit second. Man, there is no better line of protection than where Ohtani is at right now. And so I wondered if they would do that. That allows you then to slide Will Smith. If you wanted Freddie Freeman to stay in the three spot, no big deal. If you wanted to flip him and Will Smith, that's pretty darn good going Mookie, Ohtani, Smith, and especially the way that Will Smith is hitting this postseason, and then Freddie Freeman. So we'll see kind of what that lineup looks like. But to me, if I were wanting to try and jumpstart Mookie, I'd put him right in that leadoff spot, give him the first AB of the game, and know that if you put him on, you got my best bullet in Ohtani right behind him.
And that is one thing you can do in baseball. You can take a guy who's struggling and put him in a leadoff spot. He'll get more fastballs. It's a different approach, a different mindset. Other than that, baseball, it's not like basketball where, all right, we'll shoot fewer threes, we'll go to the hoop. In football, we'll run the ball more, we'll pass it more, we'll change our game plan. Baseball, you go up there, it's one-on-one. You either hit or you don't. So, you know, you can sit here and try to think of all these things to jumpstart these guys. At the end of the day, they got to go up there and they got to hit.
They do. And speaking of, let's give some love here to Toronto. You have, obviously, Vladdy has just been on another planet, right? If they win it, he's your MVP for the Toronto Blue Jays. The supporting cast, though, I think it deserves as much credit as any. I mean, you're looking at guys like Ernie Clement. He's got an 11-game hitting streak right now, one shy. I think the Jays franchise record is Pat Borders back when they won it the first time in 92, and that would be 12 games. And so looking at not only – what Ernie Clement has done, the role players. Andreas Giménez at the bottom of the lineup. I think I talked to you about it. Two of the most consequential swings in their postseason run were the two go-ahead home runs in Seattle. They get back up off the deck in Game 3 and Game 4. Big reason why they're here. Nathan Lucas and, man, Addison Barger. Holy hell. What a great couple of guys and kids they're going to have for years to come. IKF, you know, just comes over and ends up being a Gold Glove second baseman up the middle. And then Bo Bichette at 70%, maybe, is better than so many guys at 100%. Your stars have to be stars. They've had that. But, you know, Alejandro Kirk getting back to his offensive resurgence of just a handful of years ago. That lineup now is so deep. Will, they've scored 100 runs this postseason. They need one more, okay, to share the record with the 0-2 Angels. And we remember that vaunted group going up against the Giants. And then the 2020 Dodgers, and that was the pandemic year when they scored 101 too. So it's remarkable, just up and down. Yes, Vladdy has been on another planet, but the rest of the guys have really met the moment too.
It's a little like the Pacers last spring, where you've got the one star in Halliburton,
great comp,
all
yeah.
these guys stepping up. You've got all the comebacks, the rallies, and I just keep going back to the resilience. And that's a cliche; it's an overused word, but. Seattle down 2-0 and down 2-0 in game 3 with Bieber struggling, men on. Looks like, all right, this series is going to be quick. Game 7, you're down 2 runs late in the game, the 7th inning. Even the Yankee game where they blew game 3, you're figuring, all right, here we're going back to Toronto for game 5. They've just continued to answer punch after punch, and then the ultimate one to lose that game on Monday night, fall behind 2-1, the next two are on the road. Who knows if we're even getting back to Toronto, and here they are, one win away from a World Series. It's incredible.
I think just overall, thinking of where the Dodgers as defending champs, and listen, hey, they're still the champs. You still got to knock them out, and that's the hardest win to get. To think about where the Dodgers are offensively and how they were built, for them to be just barely over the Mendoza line, they're hitting 201 as a team. Money can buy you all kinds of things in baseball. It'll get you to the precipice of a championship, but you still got to go out and win it. And I think it is remarkable to see what this Jays pitching staff, top to bottom. I mean, it goes without saying, you get a 22-year-old rookie, Andreas Savage, put up the single game record in strikeouts with 12 in game 5. And the kid was at Dunedin, Florida, making his first professional start April 8th. Incredible. Will, you and I have played the game. To realize the catapult of the journey and to be here this quickly just for him in of himself, it goes without saying, it's just an unbelievable, it's a surreal journey to watch Trey Savage do what he did in game 5. And then who knows, game 7, everyone is going to be available, probably outside of Kevin Gausman. I don't know if they can go back. You got to also respect the kid's career. He's done everything possible for you. I think in my heart of hearts, I'd have to stay away from him just out of the moral, you know, issues of trying to run the kid out there yet again on short rest. But man, I hope we get a game 7. I think the Dodgers have enough to push it that way. And then what a scene it's going to be in Toronto Friday night and Saturday if they get there.
And it's one of those, you get these games sometimes where no matter who you pick, if you get it wrong, you're going to feel like an idiot. It just doesn't feel right to fade the Blue Jays right now. It just feels like a magical story. Everything's clicking. They're home, the chance to close it. It feels like the Blue Jays. By the same token, if you pick against the Dodgers and the Dodgers win 2-0, like, why would I pick against this team? It's still the Dodgers. It's still all this down. So it's really fascinating. Your final prediction is what? Dodgers in 7 or Blue Jays in 7?
I'm going to go Blue Jays in 7. Okay. I think they get it done. I think we get the game 7 everyone is looking forward to. We need a little Will Hill and J-Lew money if we want to get in. I don't know if you saw some of the get-in prices for the upper deck, upwards of 2,000 Canadian, which I think with the exchange rate is like 1,500 American. But this is pretty neat, man. It's pretty cool to see the international nature of it. The ratings have been just through the roof, both domestically and across the world. So we're truly getting a heavyweight fight, and I think it will go the distance.
Dave Ross is going to be sitting in the on-deck circle with the ticket he has. Dave, he's going to sit wherever he wants. He pull up at shortstop, he do whatever he wants. Might get in the bat with the money he's looking at. MVP, Guerrero minus 205, Ohtani plus 230, Yamamoto 12-1. Would you cut it off there at 3? Can anyone else win it? And what are your thoughts on this award?
Yeah, no, it's those are the three. And for Yamamoto to win, it's going to have to be not only a deep, it's got to be at least 7. I don't think he can give up more than 2 runs. He's got to be close to double digits and punch outs. Just knowing that you're essentially asking Ohtani to be quiet for game 6 and game 7 Yamamoto to be dominant yet again and for the Dodgers to get across. So I think Vladdy ends up doing, you know, what Vladdy usually does. So I would keep it at those three for sure.
When this series ends, either Friday or Saturday, we will very quickly turn the page and the story will become, where does Tarik Skubal pitch? It sounds like there's real steam on him getting traded. Do you think that happens? And where do you think he ultimately ends up next year? I know we'll have plenty of time to talk about it, but it will be fascinating.
If that price tag remains above $400 million, there's no way he stays in Detroit. It is remarkable with where that asking price is and the injury history here, Will. I mean, and in good conscience, and I'm all about pitchers getting their money, but in good conscience, I don't think that ownership group could shell that out knowing what they know internally. And with what you are guaranteed to have to pay that man, and listen, he's earned it. He's going to win the Cy Young again this year. But I think in good faith for what you're trying to build, what Tarik Skubal can bring you back in a trade far outweighs those guaranteed dollars at the back end of that contract. It is just going to hamstring you. They've already gone through it one time with Miguel Cabrera here in recent years. And I don't think they're going to be able, if that number stays where it is, I don't think they're going to be able to hold on to him.
I totally get it. I'd be terrified to pay him. It'll end up being a bad contract. These pitchers are almost like running backs where they just, they're so, it's not that they're replaceable, but they get hurt so often. The shelf life is just so finicky. That being said, it's a pretty bad look to have a guy this good and just say, all right, can't pay him, we'll trade you. I mean, that's it's bad for the fans. It's just, it doesn't sit right.
I get that part. Listen, if anyone has lived through it, I have here in Cleveland when they had to make the really tough decision about trading Francisco Lindor. I wholeheartedly endorsed it because I felt that Jose Ramirez meant more to this club than Frankie, and it's worked out. I think in spades, knowing what you've, I mean, the most affordable superstar contract in baseball is what Jose Ramirez is under here in Cleveland. Here are some of the names, and what I think is fascinating is if you do go out and you trade Tarik Skubal, the amount of money you save, will that be reinvested into, you know, guys like a Framber Valdez, a Dylan Cease, a Ranger Suarez. Remember, Jack Flaherty can opt out of his contract still. Freddie Peralta has a club option. You know, you're still going to have plenty of frontline starters that you can go out and pay. And I would think that a lot of guys look at Detroit as an up-and-comer. They still need some offense, too. Still, it's not just about getting Skubal back. There's a lot of other pieces that they need offensively and within that rotation. So the sum of the parts, we saw it work for the Yankees this year when you got rid of Soto and you were able to get back to an opportunity to get to an LCS and a World Series. I'm with you. I know there were still some extenuating circumstances, but you got to remember economically where Detroit is at versus where a New York Mets is at, where a Yankees are at. I think that they have to do what's right, not only for the short term, but the long term as well.
Yeah, and the Yankees were able to piece it together and did a nice job. That being said, it was pretty nice having Soto up every three at bat, every three innings with Judge, with that version of Stanton. And you just look around what the Yankees had in the playoffs. There was just not much around Judge. And you had that elite bat of Soto. It was such a great duo. I really miss, you know, watching those two guys hit back to back. One word answer, then we'll do football and get out of here. Skubal's on what team next year?
I thought the Cubs. Okay. Because if the Cubs aren't going to take Tucker, then it will, man, think about the top end with Horton, with Imanaga, with Justin Steele, Tarik Skubal, man alive, that he would look amazing.
If he goes to the Dodgers, you know what? It's that would be just.
That's Tucker. Can't to me, that's the only place Tucker can go, right? If he's getting that money.
I meant Skubal, but yeah.
Yeah. If Skubal goes out, no chance. I don't. Okay, I can see it. But you're right. There will be a full mutiny of 29 other fan bases if that happens.
Favorite NFL bet this week? Favorite college football bet this week?
Okay, so college football, and it's going to be a homer pick. I think it's an amazing trap spot for the Commodores. But I do think my Vandy boys can keep this dream season alive. I'll take the points with Vandy. I think it's another defensive battle. I think the under is a great play in that game. It's probably coming down to the last possession. Obviously, everything hinges on concussion protocol here for Arch Manning. I know Dave Ross and I, for our Circa Millions entry, we go back and forth every Thursday on what we like. We landed our two favorites this week were the Lions and the Texans, and I think the Lions is probably my favorite one. Smash spot for them. What are we getting out of that Vikings offense with J.J. McCarthy. You speak of mutiny. I can't even imagine being in that locker room right now and what they did to Carson Wentz. I think a lot of people know more than what is being let on. That's a story for another day. So Lions, -8.5, -9 would be my favorite NFL play this week.
Jensen, you're the best man. Appreciate you coming on. Where can we find you?
At JLew50, that's JLewFifty on the X Machine and Instagram. Of course, every weekday, 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern on VSiN by the Books. Great to be with you, buddy, as always.
Thanks for coming on.
You bet.
Rate, review, subscribe. We appreciate some more reviews trickling in here. Enjoy Halloween. We turn the calendar to November. Next time we talk, it'll be Monday. We'll have college basketball underway. How is that possible? But Game 6 of the World Series, possibly a Game 7. We'll see you Monday.